All right, I'm here in the studio getting... Oh, hold on a second. I have a call from a blocked number. Hello?
Yes, hi. This is Federal MID Agent Doug. And what I am, you may have heard of our agency, the Men in Black. Now, you probably have once thought of it as a fictional agency, but I can assure you we are real and we are out there protecting you. And we're having some recruitment efforts right now, and that's why I'm calling you today.
Okay, wait a minute. You're from the Men in Black, and you're saying that that's real, and you're Agent Doug? Agent J or Agent K? What happened to that?
You know, there's only a finite amount of letters here, and, you know, once we got more than 26 agents, you know, we had to start, having other names. I don't think of our identities. We're given an identity. Our complete history is erased, and we are given a new persona. My persona is Doug Chad. I don't know who picked that name.
Doug Chad?
But, yeah, that's what I live with day to day now. Let me explain to you why you are your candidate. First of all, you're physically fit. You're about 6'8", 290.
No, no. You, body fat. You have me mistaken, sir. I'm not physically fit, and I'm like 5'10", and I don't weigh that much, so...
Okay, well, we can inject tons of muscles into you. That's not a problem.
No, I don't want that.
Technology that'll get you to that height. I'm going to get you to that weight.
I don't want to be 6'8". I don't want to be 6'8".
Sir, let me assure you that you're going to have to be that height to man, you know, all types of alien craft. You know, this is... You know,
I don't want to.
I haven't even gotten to the pay yet. We're willing to pay you 40 drachmar.
What's a drachmar? How much is that?
Just come explore your options. You know, let me erase your fingerprints once to see how it feels. Just try it on.
Okay, I'm interested now.
Okay, great. I've already contacted your whole family about this, and they know I've been flashed and, you know, taken care of.
Why would you? Will you erase their memories already?
Here and there.
Here and there.
They should be fine. Like one, I think your father had like his glasses on, and I did it twice to him. So like, I don't know if he's like really messed up, but you know, he's good. He'll be fine. You know what? You don't need to worry about that because you're not associated with them anymore. That's the best part.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's right? True. So they're not really even my family.
No. I'm your family now. And we have a great identity. It's coming through the wire now. Yes. Thank you, Courtney. Okay. Your new identity is Doug Chadson. Okay.
Wait. I'm Doug Chadson?
Yeah, it's okay. Trust me. I mean, I have a similar name.
That's what I was going to say.
You can do... You know, tons of different variations of Doug and Chad. So that's what, you know, is happening nowadays.
All right. Well, I look forward to reporting to work on Monday.
All right. Well, great, sir. You're going to love your new life. And, you know, welcome to the Men in Black. I will make sure that you don't remember this conversation. So just if you actually could look into the camera, your phone really quick.
Yep, sure.
Hello, Ethan?
Yes? Who's this?
This is Dan Chad, President of Seeker. Just want to wish you good luck on your podcast today on Gravity. Just have a great time. You're just dandy and good for you.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, Gravity. That's right. I can't wait to do it.
Yeah, you don't remember anything in the past few minutes, right?
No.
Nothing happened to you. Don't try to investigate anything.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks for calling.
All right, great. You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bad science. Did the movie get it right? Bad science, or will we have to fight? Bad science. Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Bad Science. I, as always, am your host, Ethan Edinburgh, and today we're talking about a classic film with Sandra Bullock and George Clooney called Gravity, which was very dividing, I want to say. A lot of my friends really did not like this film. I personally like this film, but we'll get into it after I introduce our guests. I'm very delighted to have here the Associate ISS Program Scientist at CASIS, the Center for the Advancement of Science in Space. It's Dr. Liz Warren.
Hello. Actually, we say CASIS.
CASIS.
But
I've never said that word before just now, so I don't know CASIS, though.
Yes, and so that stands for Center for the Advancement of Science in Space. And essentially, we manage the national lab portion of the International Space Station.
Whoa. Okay, so are there different portions of the International Space Station? It sounds like, how many different portions are we talking about?
Well, essentially, the space station itself was built by 16 nations working together. And these groups include Russia, the United States, Canada, Japan, and the European Space Agency. And the United States portion is designated as a U.S. national lab.
Oh, okay. And that's what you are...
My organization manages the science that is performed there.
Okay, very vague. I feel like there's some sort of hidden weaponry that I'm not supposed to ask about. Okay, but I want to introduce our other guest, a fantastic local San Franciscan comedian. Do they say that?
That works.
How would you say that? San Franciscan?
Are you curious about how to say San Franciscan? Or
San Franciscan?
Or you just do people...
Shuan?
I like that.
Okay, let's go
with
that.
I'm a delicious
Nicole Kalasic.
Yeah.
Did I say that right?
You sound great.
Well, I sound great, but
you
I said it
awesome.
Wrong, probably. Close enough, maybe.
I manage several social media accounts, so I'm very also equipped to be here to talk about
time,
this movie.
I would say, geez. I don't want to waste too much of your time. Okay, so have you guys seen Gravity? When did you first see it? Did you see it recently? Give me your gravitational history here.
You first?
All right. I saw Gravity actually during a screening just before the movie was released.
Ooh.
So a few people at NASA got invited to a screening.
Okay.
And so I saw it when it was first released. And then I think the only other time I saw it was last weekend. I made sure I watched it so I had more recent memory of the film.
Okay, okay.
Were the stars there at your screening?
No.
Oh, bummer.
That would have been nice.
Not worth
just,
it.
Just people that have been near stars. Nearer to stars?
Some astronauts were there. So that was cool. I had that
going
for me.
Yeah, that's really cool that they invited like NASA employees to go see the film first. I wonder if it was because they wanted to hear any complaints that you
guys
had.
Yeah, I was like, they didn't do it for them.
No, they were they were very curious to hear our feedback, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, cool.
And did you complain? Did you say, like, well, this doesn't make sense, blah, 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 whatever?
No, you know, I was so stunned by the film the first time I saw it. I remember actually like having tears in my eyes.
Wow.
I liked it. I liked it.
Yeah.
Despite having some issues, which I'm sure we'll talk about.
Sure.
I Gravity really liked or it. Contact? Which one did you like better?
Oh boy.
That's tough.
Yeah, I have a hard time reading
movies. I feel like
movies.
If this emo got you, then I wonder if Contact.
Yeah, of course I cried during Contact.
Yeah.
But I can't compare them. I don't know. They're different.
That's tough. I would probably say Contact if the question was posed to me, but not by a huge margin. I like them both.
That's saying something.
What did you think of the film?
I watched it this morning for the first time. I hate you forever for making me watch it.
All right. Sorry about that. Where did you, like...
It's impressive. It's very impressive, but I already was feeling a little anxious, and I was like, this is making me spiral.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
I hate everyone here.
But I think that's saying something, like, that a movie
can... It's powerful,
make you feel that way. I'm into that. I want to feel... If a movie can make
me
uncomfortable...
I feel nothing normal. Mm.
I can make me feel anything. Pain. You know, make me... I don't know, nervous, anxious. I think that's good.
Yeah, they did a great job.
Yeah, but you did not, you wouldn't say.
It's a good movie. I think there are some tropes that they use that as a writer, I didn't feel were totally necessary.
Mm-hmm.
But I do love the odd coupleness of Sandy B and George Clooney.
Georgie
C, we just go on a first name basis.
Yeah.
I also just appreciate that flirting survives in Zero Gravity.
Oh, totally. Yeah, absolutely. And I like that they both, there was a line that happened twice about eyes where he says you have beautiful blue eyes. And she goes, I
they're brown
eyes.
Yeah.
And then she does the same thing to him later.
It
was very strange.
It's super strange.
Yeah.
But I did think it was really, really stunning. Very stunning to watch.
Yes.
I have to ask then, what size screen did you watch it on?
I didn't watch it on a huge screen. And I appreciate that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if it was an IMAX, it would have been unbelievable.
You were immersed completely.
No, yeah. It was a 15-inch laptop, for sure.
I would discourage
I don't have access to an IMAX that'll just show Gravity for me this morning.
Or did you go computer speakers?
Computer speakers.
Yeah, I can now I'm pinpointing, I think, why you didn't get the exact...
I mean, I can imagine.
Sure. I saw it the first time in theaters and was definitely, I was a little bit on your side as far as torn with the writing of the film and just what the series of events that occurred and how some things are very coincidental.
Yeah.
But the experience of watching that movie in theaters is very special.
Yeah.
I think it was really,
I was sad I didn't watch it when it first came out because
yeah,
of that. Yeah.
I think that's totally valid. I mean, I don't know. I honestly have no idea how they even got these shots. I mean, maybe if there's a documentary that comes out, people can check it out, but they were really long shots without cuts,
yeah.
Or at least it didn't seem like there was cuts.
They just like ripped off Planet Earth. Like, it's original.
Trust us. Okay. So, bring up, by the way, your tropes you have a problem with. Anybody can ask questions at any time, okay? Well, feel free.
I feel like I'm the only one that's going to be seeing this. I'm context. I'm Latina, and I feel like this is a very Latino movie.
Okay.
Like, just the way, anytime there's a female lead in a Latino-directed movie, like, it's always, like, a pull about her motherhood or her loss and, like, her emotion. I was like, how is a scientist, like, this nervous the whole time, beginning to end?
It's a very good question.
Liz, I think you would have killed it up there. You'd be like, shut up, George, I'm working.
Yeah, I know what I'm doing. Yeah.
I don't feel barfy at all.
Well, I don't know. I probably would feel a little bit barfy, okay, just knowing myself. But that actually brings up an interesting point. So Sandra Bullock's character, uh-huh, Ryan Scott, I believe her last name is, I think she said she trained only for a few months.
6 months.
6 months.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that is not very realistic.
Right? It's bonkers.
Early on in the space shuttle program, we did have what were called payload specialists. And those were scientists that received minimal training to go to space because they were uniquely qualified to operate a particular piece of hardware or scientific equipment. They didn't really have to know all of the astronaut stuff. They were there to do a specific payload, and that's a term for what we use at NASA for a science experiment.
Oh.
And so
I always thought payload was like something you're dropping, like a huge tank don't know what.
I guess more like a triple X situation. But, sorry.
No. So
probably not what they're doing over there.
Actually, and it's not necessarily a science. NASA, we say payload is as basically this is what a vehicle or a rocket is bringing to space. And but I guess it's got two different nomenclatures.
Yeah.
But so Ryan did not train very much for that space flight, and you can tell she does not act very much like an astronaut in some of these cases. But on the other hand, she kind of does when she pulls herself together and decides, I am going to survive this.
Yeah.
And astronauts are trained to handle every problem that comes their way, and they're trained so well, they believe they will be able to handle everything that comes their way.
I guess that was like my other question I have about that is like she had such like she was so comfortable just getting into like my daughter's dead, I'm so depressed like the whole time.
Right.
If someone was really like that clearly down, would they get like would emotional stuff bar them from going into space?
I would assume so.
Right? Like it'd be like so I don't think they want to live, dude.
Everyone has emotional stuff, right?
Right,
everyone.
Of course.
So it's the ability to compartmentalize.
That's what I mean, yeah.
Right.
You guys have like a compartmentalizing test. What am I trying to say? Compartmentalizing test, you know?
I think it is a little bit of self-selection. The people that apply to be astronauts and make it into the astronaut corps are able to do that. So I don't think there's a specific test for it. There's screening for, you know, psychological stability.
Yeah.
Okay, okay.
But certainly the ability to focus on a task, no matter what else is going on, is really important.
Right.
Yeah. There were a couple moments, and that's one of them in the film, where they could have easily, I think, just by changing that line, made it a lot more realistic. Because when she said 6 months, there was automatically a red flag in my head of like, really? 6 months?
Also, like them just talking like they'd just hung out for the first hour of their lives and didn't like fly to space together.
Must have been, quite the process.
Yeah.
Very strange.
Like, where are you from? It's like, what?
Actually, in fact, astronauts spend so much time together while they're training to go to space. They know each other very well. So that kind of bothered me in the film.
They met at a bar.
You didn't just meet and go to space together. You, in real life, will have trained and almost be as close as family, I think.
Oh, that sounds so sweet.
That is so sweet.
I
want to
be in NASA.
Yeah, let's get out of here. Let's go start training. And about the freaking out aspect of it, I was watching stuff about Apollo 13 and about how they, like, because that movie's, you know, famously very accurate. But there were the tapes that they used, because they actually record all these tapes, you know, and even when things are going terribly wrong and it seems like they're in so much trouble, everybody's calm. All the astronauts, very calm, you know, and in the film, obviously, they're a little more panicked and it's, you know, drama for the film.
Yeah, but even before impact, I felt like she was more, like, noticeably anxious.
Yeah, yeah. She was freaking out a couple times in the movie, which I get. I would probably be freaking out.
And that's probably realistic for someone who is only trained to be in space.
Yes, that's
right,
fair.
For 6 months.
Fair. Okay, okay, I'm, so they I'm coming around on this.
Yeah, yeah. Now you're going to love the film. we got to do a screening, I think, is really the deal. We got to, like, rent out a movie theater and have you come and see it, like, the real deal. Because, I don't know, it's a little, I think that's, like, almost the point of the movie is to make you feel like, holy crap, I'm up there.
Yeah.
You know, there was a couple times I even felt that rewatching it. I mean, I was watching on a little bit bigger of a screen, like at home, but I still felt, you know, that like almost nauseating feeling.
Oh, yeah.
Cause it's a lot of the shots are like spinning and I don't know, it makes you feel like you're stranded in space, which is very scary. I have some, you know, questions that are more like very specific and intensive and complicated. And then I have questions that are incredibly stupid. And so this is one of those questions there's a part in the movie where someone says data and then when they're repeating back the information, they say data.
I do remember that actually.
Right?
Yeah.
And it was another moment of like, what? Why couldn't
they
just?
You can fix that. You can have another take for that.
ADR, like most of the people in this movie, you don't see. It's just the, you know, it's comms. So I was just going to ask you if you say data or data.
So plural, it's data.
Okay. And she is very certain about this.
She just got so, like, this has come up for you a lot.
Yeah, she hates when people say this.
No.
When it's one piece of information or one document, you're saying
if
data.
It's one, or is it not datum? No, I guess
datum.
That would definitely be plural, huh?
I don't know. I've never even heard of that.
I mean, my egg is an ovum, right? So that's one. So really taking the feminine perspective today.
Yeah, which I need. I don't know about that.
Let's say one data point. No, that's the correct thing to say.
It's data point.
I just screwed that up.
And then, like, I'm getting all the data. That sounds right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? Maybe it's not so important to how you say it.
I feel like it could be both. I was just curious what you guys say.
Data from Star Trek, so I don't know.
Oh, right. But that's a...
It's an android.
I almost said it's a person.
Sort of a
person. Maybe he's filled with data. Data is filled with data?
No. Yes, many data.
Okay, so we're going to circle back and get the answers to how do you say someone from San Francisco and how do you say data or data? Mm-hmm. Or if there's even an answer to that, which there may not be. Okay, so we already got to the 6 month training space. I wanted to see a little bit more of that third guy. I don't know if you guys remember his name.
Sharif.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I was like, how are you going to kill the only ethnic dude?
They made it so fast.
His name's freaking Sharif. They have a picture at the end. It's like, did you like think maybe he was not ethnic? And there's like, for sure, here's
definitely
his beautiful
ethnic
brown family. He's the only one. Damn it, sorry. He's the only one who's actually happy the whole time.
He's like a big goofball.
And they're like, he did. He did right away.
Hole in his head dead.
Hole in his head
oh,
dead.
Oh, totally.
Was that for
call.
Real? Would it be like that? Just straight through? And then, like, the rest preserves?
Probably.
That was crazy to
me. I don't think we actually know the answer to that question, so.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
You haven't done tests where you send someone out into space and then launch things projectile through their bodies?
No, fortunately not.
I know a lot of comedians who would volunteer for that research study. Yeah. For, like, $50.
That's a good way to go.
Not bad.
That's memorable. Okay, so the main plot point here in this film is a wave of debris, this hurricane of debris, which is circling the planet, right? So it keeps coming back at them like a tsunami or something like that. And so I had a lot of questions about this.
Yeah.
So number one, I know that there is space garbage, right? So can you let's at least attack that point first. What how much space garbage is there? What is it composed of?
There are literally tons and tons of debris that hit the Earth every day from space.
Like it falls into the Earth's gravitational pull?
Yes.
And we have no way of making sure that doesn't happen? It sounds incredibly dangerous, what you're describing.
Well, fortunately, most of it, almost all of it, is incinerated by friction as it enters the atmosphere.
Okay, so, that's good news.
But
Can it hit a plane? What if a plane's up there? Still no?
I think the chances of that happening are minuscule.
Okay, but that's what you're trained to say.
Don't worry.
You'll be fine.
But orbital debris, so that's debris that is in orbit around our planet, is a real thing. A lot of it is man-made.
Sure.
Human-made, I guess I'm going to go with that and say.
Okay.
Thank you for like, looking at me like I remember. Women count, too. Thanks.
We're all humans, right?
Yeah, absolutely. there's a lot of debris. Some of it is old, spent spacecraft or disabled or spacecraft that are no longer operating. And in order to be in orbit, something has to be traveling very quickly, like 17,500 miles per hour-ish. Yeah.
So fast.
That's very, very fast. But space is big anyways. Like, we're talking about this debris, and it's not so much a cloud. It's literally kind of all over, but it's in various planes. In other words, kind of various altitudes above the Earth.
Okay.
And this was one of the movie inaccuracies. Mm-hmm. So the International Space Station orbits at about 250 miles above the surface of the Earth.
Whoa.
And the Hubble Space Telescope, where we first encounter our heroes, is closer to, I think, 350 miles above the surface of the Earth. So already, they're already pretty far apart.
Yeah.
And then
how close were they in the movie?
Dude.
I feel like they
were just like they could see, right? Weren't they? Mm. It was very close. Like
so, you wouldn't be able to see it.
Maybe you would see it if it was in the light, and you'd see a star that was moving, and you're like, "Well, that's not a star. That's the Hubble."
Yeah.
So, but and the Chinese space station, the Tiangong, it was also in a different orbital plane, I believe. Well, altitude and orbital plane.
So how long, if you had to guess, would it take to, and I know we're jumping around, but to get from each one of these places to one another?
It would take a while and certainly more fuel than was in Matt Kowalski's jet pack, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be more difficult to do than just simply, I'm going to point that direction and go there.
Okay.
Orbital mechanics are pretty challenging and tricky to calculate.
Yeah.
So
it really was a space cowboy in this whole thing.
Yeah, but it was kind of
so
cool,
true.
But so not so realistic.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so the debris, which is completely like all over in all directions, does it create problems? Does it move like that in the film? Because there's a lot of like tiny bits, it seemed like small bits that were all moving together, which seemed frightening.
That would be, it's very frightening. Fortunately, a lot of the debris that is in orbit, including the International Space Station, not to call it debris, but a lot of the items that are in orbit, they're all traveling actually in the same direction.
Okay.
So they do not encounter each other quite so often.
Oh.
Got it.
But they are tracked. NASA tracks debris, and the Air Force, NORAD, tracks debris. And it is an issue. Every once in a while, the space station has to be moved. Ooh. If a large enough piece of debris, and I believe it's 3 centimeters, gets within some boundary, like a kilometer from the space station. Just to be safe, they actually can move the space station.
Wow.
Out of the way.
So I'm.
What a faster movie it would have been.
I just move it.
I would have just wrapped it right up.
Whoa, we got some debris coming in. Whoops, you're good.
No problem. We knew that it was coming in, and we're moving the space station, so it's all fine. I'm just having a tough time wrapping my head around, and I'm not trying to insult the NASA or the space program at all, but it seems a little weird that we have so much planning in going to outer space, and yet there's all of this garbage that is just released or is just floating. You know, I know things aren't perfect, you know, you can't make the perfect thing, but why, like, why are these tiny, you said 3 centimeter is like the, what is 3 centimeters big that's just out there?
So that, something 3 centimeters may be the size of something like a broken piece of an old satellite or something broken.
Mm-hmm.
Most items are larger than that, and we track them. And so these may be old satellites that are no longer functional. They ran out of fuel and are what are you going to do with that? So you have to wait.
I can think
years
of several things. I would say
you can't recycle it, Liz.
Yeah, recycle it is cool.
It.
Or just like
you can't build a fort.
Can't you just
really
push it
stuff.
A little bit? Because in space, it's, you know, can't you push it? You know, so it just goes out there, and we don't have to deal with it.
So you know what you guys sound like? You guys sound.
Please tell us.
Really smart
and
people.
Be honest.
No, no. But I'm saying you guys sound like the innovative kind of people that we are looking for to bring your ideas.
Great.
To the national. Lab. We actually have people that want
Space
to.
Force right here.
Yes, we're the first to
we
Space
want
Force
people
employees.
To have ideas. And why can't we recycle that stuff? Why can't we go and
sure.
grab it and reuse it or bring it back to Earth and or burn it up or whatever?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It just seems so dangerous because I saw a map. I obviously did not study this or do much research because I figured you would, you know, school me here. But I did see a picture of all of that garbage that's around the Earth, and it's scary to look
it's
at.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot. Go look it up, guys. There's a ton of crap just orbiting the Earth all the time. And mm-hmm. I was just, I don't know, a part of me just felt like, this doesn't make any sense. How, like, mm-hmm. I get that there's garbage in the streets of L.A. That makes sense. It's like millions of people living way too close to mm-hmm. each other. And, you know, you can't know who's going to be accountable. But these people are astronauts. You guys are, like, geniuses going
it's
up there.
Space. How is space dirty?
Right, exactly.
It's
it seems preposterous
space.
To me.
Inferior.
Yeah. Yeah, so I just, I don't know. There was a part of me that felt like, okay, so yeah, there's a satellite, it goes offline, something breaks, and the decision is just like, oh, well, now just leave it in the orbit.
Well, this brings up a point of how challenging space flight is. You can't just say, well, let's just go pick up all that trash because that mm-hmm. should be easy. It's not.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So it's a challenge though. It's one of the problems we have in space flight is that we've got a bunch of debris and much of it is a result of human space flight.
Wow.
And satellites and whatnot. So, you know, you can think of it as a resource. You can think of it as a resource, maybe. You know, maybe because mm-hmm. there's probably some good stuff out there if someone's willing to go get it.
If you were willing to launch it up there in the first place, it's probably something, useful. So has this kind of thing happened before was one of my other questions. Has there been emergency type situations that had to do with debris or on the ISS
in
general?
I'm glad you asked.
Yes.
Yeah, no,
so,
please, Nicole. Last time you were up there.
There have been emergencies where the astronauts get a call from mission control and say, like, just like in the movie, hey, there's debris headed your way.
Whoa.
And we don't know how big it is or exactly where it is.
Whoa.
So go to your lifeboat and we'll let you know when it passes.
Oh, my God.
This happens maybe twice a year, actually.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to cry. I'm so stressed.
If you need a second
that.
To cry, please.
So
it's my worst nightmare.
In fact, did you guys follow the year in space with Scott Kelly? He spent a year in space with a Russian, Mikhail Kornienko. You guys don't know about this?
Okay. I know that because we did one. Which, on Armageddon, I was told that there was a terrible film, by the way.
Actually, I loved it.
You love Armageddon? It's so
you
funny.
You just, like, love all space movies.
I mean, can't blame her.
Maybe that's it.
It was. I'll tell you what. Maybe what happened to me was that I loved it when it came out and I was younger. And then I had to rewatch it for the podcast. And I was like, what in the hell is this movie? It was, like, such a joke to me. But whatever. Leaving that aside, there was a character that was on a Russian, I don't know what it was, but that it
I think that was the Mir space station. And he
okay.
was... He'd been there too long.
Right, and exactly. And that was kind of the joke of his character, was
right,
that he'd been there
right.
too long, he's kind of losing his mind.
Uh-huh.
But my now friend who works at JPL was telling me that, in fact, there was a Russian astronaut who was up there for like 18 months by himself. Is that what you are referring to?
Nope, I don't think that's true, actually.
Oh, he told me it was true. I looked
Let
it
her
up.
Let her talk and you'll
18
find
months
out.
By himself? No.
It was something like that. It was a long time that
so
he was up there.
The longest
during like Soviet
time
Union.
That it, okay, so this is, you're getting it close, actually. The longest time that a human being has lived in space continuously is 437 or maybe 438 days. His name is Valery Polyakov, but he was not alone.
Oh, he was not alone.
No.
Someone just came later or something? Does he not get the title too?
Yeah,
well,
that's a good question.
Okay, so he was there, but other people came and went.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. But anyways.
Sort of alone. I mean,
where,
that's...
But where
I mean,
I was going
got,
with
like,
that,
company.
Though, is during Scott's mission and Mikhail, they were there for a year. And at one point during their mission, they had to get into their lifeboat Soyuz and wait for this object to hopefully not impact the space station. And everything turned out fine, but we are in an abundance of conservative nature. We said, get in your lifeboat just in case.
Sure. Okay. And the lifeboat would, it's, by the way, hilarious
boat,
that you
terrible.
Call it a lifeboat.
Very strange. So it's their ride up and down to... up to space and down to Earth. It's called a Soyuz spacecraft. And mm-hmm.
Which they mispronounce in the film, by the way.
They
right?
did say it wrong a couple of times.
Soyuz, they keep
yeah.
saying.
That was George Clooney. I don't know where he got that.
Got it. He probably said it, and everyone else all said was like, don't correct George Clooney. Leave him alone. Georgie C., let him be. That's what they say. So... that's another funny thing. I was referring to stuff by saying up in space and back down to Earth, and I was going to ask you if you guys say that, but I guess you just proved
I do.
Oh, okay. Do other people say, like, out there and back in here on Earth?
I don't know if there's a correct nomenclature.
Okay,
maybe
okay.
There might be... I think up and down is pretty common.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. It feels like rockets go up. I don't know.
So here's actually when we're sending cargo up, mm-hmm. we refer to it as up mass,
up
like
mass.
How much mass you've got going. And then okay. when we bring cargo down,
mm-hmm. sounds,
it's referred to as down mass. So we do say up and down.
Yeah. And that also sounds like a submarine terminology. Anyways, there were some bad physics in this movie. We don't have to, like, get into all the specifics about it, but there were a few parts even me as a complete schmuck realized was it didn't make any sense. So the one that sticks out to me is the really pivotal moment where Georgie Z is leaving. He's, like, letting go of the rope or the whatever,
oh, right.
you know, Heather. And it just yeah. seemed like there's so many parts where just a little shove or like a little boost of the jet launches them in the right direction. And then in this one moment, she can't just pull and bring him in. Right. Wouldn't that work?
So what did you think about that scene?
I agree. I feel like he gave up so fast.
So fast.
I know he was out of fuel or so he said out loud, but I was like, you're not even trying. You're like Mr. Motivation
yeah.
the whole time. And then you're like, you know what? I'm done. Peace. I'm going to turn on some sad cowboy song.
Yeah. And there he's right there.
Yeah.
He's so close.
That's really annoying.
So, yeah. I agree that the physics there bothered me as well. And I had to look up an article. I remember being like, well, what's going on there? And I think that maybe this is my hypothesis here. I think that something happened between the story and the script and the actual special effects that were produced. Like, I think something might have been lost in translation a little bit.
Whoa.
But that's just my idea, because it did yeah. look like they weren't moving, so they should have been able to
yeah.
give a quick tug and totally reverse their velocity. But
yes,
he was acting like she was on a rubber band.
Yeah.
And he was
yeah.
like,
it just happened
away.
So many times, like right before mm-hmm. that he would pull or she would tug and or you know, and then she would just move.
And,
would
and that
him.
Was great physics. I was impressed many times with the great physics capture, and then some of the key moments,
right, and it's just such a yeah pivotal spot for me. That's what bothered me about it, is that like it's really important now that
yeah.
we get the physics
yeah.
right, and he's just like, ah, there's nothing I can do. Yeah. I'm out of here. It's like, what? You're holding the rope, the same rope. It's the whole time. So I thought that was really weird. And then and because there's so many accidents also, like continuously in the film, something goes wrong, and that now
not
causes
a very well built ship.
yeah, things
series
go wrong
ships. A lot.
Yeah, and so I just felt like that could have been a moment where something just went wrong. Or something hit him or cut the rope or God knows what, because then it would really drive the point home that once you're in, you know, I don't know what to call it exactly, but like once you're headed in a direction in space, there's nothing you can do about it. Right. Like there was that one like towards the beginning where she first gets knocked off and it's that really long sequence of
yeah.
her. Yeah. Spinning. And it's
would
so
she
helpless.
Really survive that. I was so caught up in that.
Oh, man.
Because it's flipping so fast.
Yeah.
At what? Like you said, 17,000 miles per hour, something like that.
Yeah.
I'm
but
like, how
yeah.
could anyone?
So but it's all relative speed. So.
Oh, man.
Anyways, I know that's going to be...
Yeah.
It's going to be Space Force Week 2. We'll get there. yeah.
Actually, though, I have to say that opening scene, and I really only noticed it this second time that I watched it, and you mentioned it earlier, being kind of a long, continuous shot and
yeah.
how impressive
yeah.
that was.
Oh,
yeah.
man.
But what I loved about it, and I've never seen it in another space film, was how you're watching Sandra Bullock tumble... You know, I almost said a bad word.
No, go ahead.
I think I said 12.
So okay. You know, just tumbling and tumbling and tumbling. And then you are with her and you're tumbling.
Yes.
Yeah. And then you're in her spacesuit and you're seeing what she's seeing, tumbling. Mm-hmm. And then you're in her head a little bit. It's almost like, mm-hmm. and she stabilizes herself and you're still and the world and the earth is spinning.
Right.
And I thought that was
brilliant.
Brilliant.
Yes, it is so good.
And she pulls herself together. She like, okay, mm-hmm. now I'm here. I'm solid. I'm going to make it back. And that's when you kind of hear, you know, she's calling to George Clooney's character mm-hmm. and they connect and he's like, I'm coming to get you. Turn on your lights.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
That was amazing.
It was terrifying.
Terrifying. Yeah, yeah. My heartbeat was going. It's definitely. Yeah.
I thought they could have almost copy pasted that moment or that feeling to when we lose Georgie C. I would have loved for him to just get knocked off by something. And then he's just. This guy's gone.
Do you say that just because of the character and the plot? Or
no.
That just because, like, I want to see George Clooney get taken out?
He's had it
too good, too long.
I love Georgie C. I wish he was there the whole film. But, you know, I didn't like the way that he left, I guess. Mm. That was my issue with it.
Got you.
Especially when they get so many things. I don't know. I don't want to say right because I'm no, specialist here. But I didn't question them. You know, I felt like, oh, this all makes sense. And then when something like that happened, I was like, why do that? Okay, so people freezing in space. I wanted to know about that because there's like, I can't remember what the scene is exactly. But like there's something happens where like the window gets like icy. And she's like really cold inside the thing.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then
she doesn't put on a sweater or anything. She just put a suit back on. She's like, I'm good.
I just got this.
I'm good.
That's
how I die.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I wanted to ask about that, like, because it's not cold in space. It's just a vacuum or...
Ooh, okay. So this is actually one of the reasons...
You just got your game face on.
Yeah, she's ready to grill me.
This is one of the reasons why people want to do research in space. First of all, that vantage point. It's 250 miles above the Earth, which is a great place to look down upon the Earth. I said down.
That's fine.
To make observations of the Earth.
Okay.
Another reason is microgravity. You're floating, and we can talk all about microgravity science in a moment.
Great.
The third is exposure to a crazy extreme environment. Space mm-hmm. is a vacuum. Mm-hmm. Almost no air particles to speak of.
Right.
That means it's very cold. Like we have a beautiful atmosphere that surrounds us and all of these air particles, which provide insulation. There's none of that in space. So it is very cold. And if you're in the sun, it's significantly warmer. So the space station itself can have a place that is in the shade, like not facing the sun.
Okay.
And it's minus 270 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay.
On the other side that is in the sun, it's like plus 300 degrees Fahrenheit.
It's like a super desert.
Well, yeah. Imagine trying to build a piece of equipment that can survive.
Yeah.
One side that hot and the other side that cold.
Yeah.
People want to use that.
Can't imagine building a piece of equipment, period, but keep going.
People want to use that to test materials. And they expose them to that vacuum, the extreme temperatures,
wow.
the potential for micrometeorites. Mm-hmm. And yes, micrometeorites have hit the space station. There's evidence and little bullet holes and dings around the space station.
Okay.
Sharp edges.
Yeah. Cool.
Fortunately, it's got some good shielding to protect, but
makes sense.
It's not 100%.
Right.
So this is one of the reasons. So it's really cold in space.
Got it.
And I can almost anticipate your next question about a human body that is exposed to space.
Right.
Death.
Instant death.
Like she wouldn't have seen the.
It's not instant. Is the
frosted.
Terrible. So a spacecraft uh-huh. would get very cold
okay.
if it were powered off.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But because of all the electronics and fans and whirring gizmos in a spacecraft, mm-hmm. Actually, a lot of heat is generated. Mm. So it's like the back of your refrigerator. It's like it's a cold thing, but it's producing all kinds of heat. Or your computer.
Okay.
So we have to find a way to get rid of that heat as well. And so the space station has big radiators to radiate that heat away.
Cool. Okay.
But a human body in the vacuum of space would not last very long at all. It would be a not pleasant death.
Would it crystallize like it showed? Yeah.
I think so.
Okay.
I think so.
Ouch. Dope.
Not good.
Not the way you want to go.
That's like a cool Halloween prop, though.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, a space corpse.
Yeah.
That's an interesting costume. I haven't seen that.
Well, you haven't gone to Liz's house.
That's true. Everybody's, yeah.
You should come. There's Yoda. There's astronauts. There's
yeah. There's, what's his name? Sharif. People go with Sharif. Yeah. She's running out of oxygen, which again is like, it's one of the things I wasn't a huge fan of because they happen to upon the next shuttle or whatever as she's running out of oxygen. Mm-hmm. So I feel
she only had 10%. She only had 10%. Oh boy, yeah. Like, what the F is that?
But there was some in so her weird. Suit.
Right.
Right.
That lasted a long time.
But I'm just like, when you were
time.
Out there, you had about 10%. Like, no way someone would give you that
oh, man.
In your tank.
If
right?
I'm out there with 10%, I'm going back in.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right now.
That's crazy.
They're going to give them a lot more margin.
Someone needs to tell these astronauts.
Yeah. Yeah. When my phone's at 10%, I'm already.
Right?
It's panic.
Panic. Yeah. Where's the charger? I'm screwed.
I need to know.
Yeah. This I could die at any moment. Her suit is running out of oxygen and she's, you know, breathing heavy and it starts to like fog up. Mm. And I was curious about that in particular, if that was a, I don't know, misstep.
A little bit of a misstep. There's actually, have you ever gone scuba diving or snorkeling?
I've been snorkeling.
Nicole?
Just snorkeling, yeah.
So have you ever used anti-fog in your mask so it doesn't get all foggy?
No, I've never very heard bad
of,
at it.
I've never heard of anti-fog.
Do you know what makes a really good anti-fog?
Nope.
Just your
anywhere,
spit.
Anywhere, not San Francisco. Oh.
If you just spit into your little mask, that works.
Oh, but, that I've done.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
But astronaut helmets have a nice, you know, special anti-fog that is wiped on the inside, and so it prevents any fogging. Because there are extreme temperatures here, and when you're breathing out, there's moisture in your breath, and that could potentially fog.
So are you saying it's possible that one's out of oxygen and breathing heavily, it could fog?
It could fog at any time. I think it's more of a temperature dependent. Are you in the sun or in the shade?
Got it. Okay. That seems more legit. There's a fire at one point that I want to say swims by. She floats by, really.
Right, right.
Everything in space is now aquatic for some reason. They have lifeboats. She's swimming.
We're talking about scuba.
So. Yeah, we're talking about scuba. So she floats by this fire and, like, doesn't notice it. And so that was odd. And then it turns into a huge fire, and she escapes the fire, which I thought, again, was a little ridiculous, because fire, from what I understand, is very fast once it's huge. And she, you know, just kind of calmly, like, seals herself in a thing, and I don't know. And then once she is in that other pod or, like, detached, nothing, because we see the outside of this space station, and it doesn't catch fire.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I didn't even think about
that. So explain that, Liz.
All right. So
what'd you do?
A couple of things that I thought were memorable about that fire scene. First of all, when I saw it, my first inkling was, hey, they got that kind of right. Fire, like water in microgravity, forms a sphere.
Whoa.
That's crazy.
Sphere of fire.
Sphere of fire. Sounds good.
Sounds cool.
And it looks cooler.
Yes.
So, you know, if you have a candle and it forms that kind of teardrop shape.
Right.
That shape is actually due to gravity. Hot air rises.
Wow.
Cold air sinks. We know this, hopefully, intuitively.
You know this.
Yeah, I knew all of it, but whatever.
And that teardrop shape is because of convection. And there's no convection in space.
Oh, my God. That's
and so this
crazy.
Makes scientists really interested. We want to study fire in space. We want to study water in space. And the reason we study, we'll keep with fire, the reason we study combustion in space is because we might be able to learn a little bit more about combustion. And if we can learn a little bit more about what's happening at the molecular level of what's going on with fuels and what's going on with the particulate, kind of the pollution, if you will, the soot that is formed, maybe we can improve combustion engines on Earth.
Whoa.
So that's one reason we actually study combustion in space. But
great.
The fact that it was forming little spheres in the movie, I was like, oh my gosh, they got that right.
Nice.
And that was actually an interesting part of the screening that I saw, because I was thinking, wow, they got the science right. In the screening that I was at, I was sitting actually between two astronauts, and one of them had seen or had been in space and the other had not. And the experienced astronaut leaned over and said, you would never do that. You would never pass by a fire. You stay and you put out that fire.
Yeah. I mean, same with here on Earth, I feel like.
Yeah, you don't just walk by something on fire.
Oh, right? Something in my house is on fire.
I'm out the building, but you guys do you. That's fine.
Yeah, someone will take care of this, I'm sure. I'm the only person on this space shuttle, but whatever. Yeah, that was a bit strange that she didn't do anything about it. Maybe she didn't see it. I guess that's
possible.
I've seen
that in other sci-fi movies, though, but I don't know if it's scientifically accurate, where it's like you're supposed to lock the fire in one chamber because that will somehow prevent it from...
Okay.
Moving into the next thing.
I guess that makes sense. My main question was, when the fire's that big, it torch whatever it's contained in? Or are they designed so that, that fire will just burn itself out inside of this shuttle and the shuttle will be fine?
So, it's also going to generate tremendous heat and a lot of smoke. So that's why you stop, drop, and roll on Earth, but that doesn't work in space.
You just float and roll, or you just say, like, well, I'm going to die here.
Actually, one of the things that actually happens on the space station is if there were ever a fire, one of the very first things that happens is that the ventilation shuts off automatically. So you're not getting movement of air.
Okay.
And that can help keep the fire where it's at. Mm-hmm. The next thing would be for the crew to find the fire, attempt to put it out if it were of the right size, small enough. Mm-hmm. But if need be, again, they need to get to their lifeboats, because that's one of the situations on orbit that could be a really bad day.
Sure.
Say the least.
Okay. Put it mildly.
Yeah. The worst day, the last day.
So the story kind of checks out.
Yeah, I think so. But I think we've actually done some interesting experiments in not just small little bits of fire. We want to know what happens to fire in microgravity. Mm-hmm. Does it propagate like it does on Earth? Is it going to burn materials? Is it going to just go through the air? We're curious about those things for space exploration reasons as well. But again, we do it for research purposes to understand maybe how to burn fuels more efficiently here on Earth. Wow. And it looks fascinating. A ball of fire is, you got to look this up.
Yeah.
Go find a picture of fire in space.
Okay. Yeah, I definitely will do that. That seems like the perfect
plugging
thing for me
fire,
to do.
Plugging fire, Liz.
Yeah, that's a good promo. Did we have a determination on whether or not that thing would explode?
I don't know.
Interesting. I thought for sure that thing would just ignite, and that would have been cool to watch in the film.
It might have, or self-extinguished.
Wasn't in the budget to blow it up.
It may have self-extinguished as well. If it runs out of oxygen, the fire's going to not make it.
Okay, so let's go with that. That makes sense. Mm. Another one that checks out. Gravity, I'm sure the whole crew is listening. Well done on that one. That one, we give you a pass.
We give you a pass.
Also, the film was great, and anything we've said that's negative, please ignore.
I have no regrets.
All right. I'm not speaking for Nicole. There's a part where she very quickly opens a door or a hatch and flies out. And that made me feel like an airplane. I've seen plenty of films where that happens, right? Where somebody's on an airplane and they hit the door and then they fly out. But the same exact physics seemed to be at play here. And I didn't know if that was accurate.
I think they are accurate. If there's any pressure in a vessel that you open, that door, hatch is going to fly open and hit you or carry you with it. Damn. I think the force involved would have been too much for her to hold on to, actually. There's a couple parts where I was like, nope, bad physics.
That's how I felt,
that was going to knock you out and bye-bye.
I was like, who can hang on? I read that, too, somewhere online. The gloves are really hard to manipulate.
Oh, that makes sense.
So even, those gripping.
Yeah.
Right.
Nah, she did.
Not realistic.
Okay, sorry. That one, you're wrong, guys. She.
I love that you apologized.
I
know you tried your best.
I don't want people to think I'm here to just crap on these films. That's not the case.
No,
I love these
movies. We're finding great stuff.
Yeah, they did a lot of stuff right, but when they're wrong, we're calling it out. And that's fine, too. It's a movie. We all get that it's a movie. So I want to talk about her landing for a second. Well, wait. Before that, she's up there, and she's thinking she's going to die. It's probably where you cried. I got a little teary-eyed as well. She finds her strength, ultimately, and it's a beautiful moment, and Sandra Bullock does an incredible job. But when she is preparing to die, when she turns off the oxygen and stuff and she's just listening to this guy talking on the radio or something, I was just thinking, do they have the ability up there? Do they have Spotify? Do they have CD players? If you knew that you were going to die, could you customize your audio playlist? Experience? Yeah, your playlist.
Interesting.
So yes, they have
death playlists.
You know, MP3 players. They've got the ability to bring lots of music with them. If you were going to space, certainly you'd want to bring your entire CD collection with you, right? You
know. So they'd play CDs specifically.
No, they used to. Now it's MP3.
Okay. MP3 like an iPod or something.
Something of that nature.
Okay, but not. They don't have infinite. They don't have the internet. They can't.
No,
just...
Oh no, the internet's pretty weak in space, which is
no
ironic.
Yes.
It's dial-up type speed.
Wow.
Very frustrating. That is...
They're living in the 90s.
That is offensive.
Yikes.
It would really test one's patience, I think.
Damn space.
So if you're a big NBA fan and you're in space, you have to listen on the radio to the games.
But actually we do have this magic thing, which is a really fast ability to send data up and down.
Okay.
So it's kind of like slow within the spacecraft, but you can send information up and down really quickly because you're using other satellites. I don't know how that works.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, you're
so
right
strange.
Next to a satellite.
Yeah.
So you're able to get it.
So they can watch, like, they can essentially get live
That's
programming.
Pretty cool.
Oh, so they can watch TV. They can all gather around and watch Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
Okay, pretty cool.
But, so to get back to your question, though.
Yeah.
So when Sandra Bullock's character is kind of resigned to the fact that, okay, I've made it this far, but this may be the end of my line here. Mm-hmm. You know, she's tearing up. And I thought those tears were kind of amazing. And there was even some great focus points where you're focused on her and you're seeing the tears float off and then you focus on the teardrop. I thought, again, another great shot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But there's actually a really great video of a Canadian astronaut, Chris Hadfield, who for a demonstration wanted to see would tears actually float off of your face.
Okay.
And surface tension, which is a force that keeps water molecules together and keeps water in your glass, and when you spill water, it keeps all the water together.
Uh-huh.
Surface tension would keep the water or the teardrops on your face pretty strongly. They wouldn't necessarily flick off unless you were batting your eyes like a lot.
Wow. Mm. Okay.
I think I saw that picture of that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crying in space.
He's a great actor.
Yeah. So I'm going to cry now. He just did it.
For science.
I think he might have helped himself with some water on his face. But but I don't know.
Okay, interesting. So what would be...
It was an effective scene, though. Like,
totally.
It's definitely sad, but part of me is also thinking that teardrop should stay on her face.
Okay, so yeah, they got that one wrong. Customizing the playlist, I wanted to ask each of you, if you're in this thing, you know
this
you're going
heavy,
down.
Bro.
I know it's heavy, but the whole thing has been lighthearted, so let's go down for a second. What is that song? That's what I was thinking.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know. Be My Baby, Inage.
What? What is that?
Yeah. At night, I think of you. I'm kidding.
Oh.
It's a party song.
No, I was going to say, okay, no, that makes sense. You know, you're you know, living in a happier time in your head.
That's tough.
I think. I would
go for like a symphony. I was like, what's 30 minutes long or something? You know, like,
yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I want to vibe
idea.
It out.
Yeah. You don't want it to end and then you're still there. Like, God
like,
damn it.
Oh, not
exactly.
That song.
My one wish.
3.5 minutes? Come on, man.
Yeah.
That's, you know, I would go with some symphonic overture as well.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I want it to be epic.
Yeah, that's true.
We grew up with Star Wars our whole lives, you know?
Right,
you can't,
yeah.
Cannot imagine space and like a beautiful orchestral situation.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yep.
I don't even know what I would, maybe something by the Beatles or like just some wonderful, like beautiful song. Yeah. Long and Winding Road or something.
What's on the golden record, right?
They
Sounds from Earth.
Yeah.
They have that blues. They have a blues
song. But they
song.
Have that ancient Chinese string piece that I thought was so beautiful.
Oh.
It's supposed to be like I think a love song or something. But
okay.
I don't know.
And someone dropped that here in post. Thank you so much.
Interesting.
It's very pretty.
Okay. So no song comes to mind for sure that is your I'm leaving this planet song.
I guess.
Yeah, by Usher. Nothing.
That would be dope.
Okay, so when she comes, this again I had an issue with that she finds the Chinese space something or other, and it's at the time that she finds it, already sinking into Earth's atmosphere.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So
that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess my question there is like, well, what's up with that? Can you enter something as it's falling into the Earth? And then also,
listen, Sandy B was in Speed. What can't she do?
That's a good point.
She's dealt with a lot of moving vehicles.
She's going at least 55. She's good.
Yeah. As long as it doesn't go under. Yeah. I thought that was very strange. And then also how like, she didn't know where it was going to land. And it just so happened not only to land in water, but like a lake, it looked like. It wasn't even the ocean,
like
which I assumed.
Shallowy water.
I was lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah, very lucky. She just like swam to land.
Yeah.
Easy.
Yeah. That could have been, well, what, 75% of our Earth is covered with oceans? That could have been.
So those, I guess, are good odds. Those are.
It's good odds, but I would
to
assume.
To land in water, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like.
Oh, that's what I meant.
Yeah. They should have, and again, I've never made a film. They should have landed just in open water, in the ocean, and I think it just would have made more sense.
I thought
sense.
It was ocean. I'm going to do hands like, back at you. You can't see our hands, but there's a lot of gesticulation happening.
Yeah, there's a lot of, what are you talking about,
there's
hands?
There's frogs, remember, and grass. I don't think it was the ocean.
Oh,
right, exactly.
I think
right.
It was a lake.
You're right.
It looked like a lake.
It looked like Fiji or something to me. The lovely. Islands
yeah.
in the background.
It's a lucky
so I was like, what is
lake.
This?
Like,
for her.
Big time.
Yeah. I mean, she hit the ground of the sea or lake floor.
Yeah, lake floor.
Yeah. And she was able to desuit.
Desuit. Ooh,
good word.
And swim.
Space Force.
Up.
Yeah. We actually say doff. You doff a spacesuit.
You doff. Oh.
It's the opposite of don.
Whoa.
Don a spacesuit to put it on and doff to take it off.
That sounds like Shakespearean terminology.
Well, now you've got some new words.
I just want a gif of you schooling us.
Yeah, yeah.
Ways.
Highlights. Yeah. So doff is to take off a spacesuit. Don is to put it on.
Yes.
Can I say that with my regular wardrobe?
Absolutely.
Wow. So I can say nice. I'm going to doff my shirt, ladies. And everyone goes, no. That's exciting.
Please, no. This is an office.
So I also want to play a game before we go. I talked to you guys very briefly before we started about the Russian language. She
oh, right.
She goes to the Soyuz or the Soyuz.
Soyuz,
excuse me. I'm quoting Georgie.
Georgie C.
Quoting Georgie C. And so my girlfriend is from Kazakhstan. So is her mother. And so they speak Russian. And so I recorded her mom saying some phrases that have to do with like space stuff.
Interesting.
And so we'll listen to that, and then maybe you guys could guess what she's saying, and I'll tell you the answers.
All right.
Okay.
Okay. So here's the first one.
Luna.
You do one more time.
That was it.
Luna.
It's one word.
Mm. I do not know.
Putin rules. I don't know. Like
Putin rules.
Vama. That's so. That's...
Oh wait. Water.
It is moon.
Oh, not water.
Yes, and I think it's like Luna sounding.
Oh, okay.
So, that's, so yeah, that does
yeah,
sound right.
She has an accent. Proper accent.
Yeah, I was like,
here's
does
the next
she?
One.
Zvezdy.
Zvezdy, it sounds like.
Zvezdy.
Zvezdy.
Mm.
Is that Mayday?
It's not. Not a bad guess. Zvezdy.
Is it a edible?
Edible?
Something that you can eat?
Like weed?
What? It is stars.
Oh,
okay.
So these are
stars.
Definitely spacey words,
spacey
and I'm
words.
Just not cluing in yet.
Spacey phrases. Hey, you're back in now.
Spacey, I'm in.
Okay, here we go.
Gravitace. Gravitace.
Oof.
Maybe say it one
I think
time.
Be that.
Doff your spacesuit.
That would be great. I would love that.
It's a very sexy thing to record of someone's mom.
Here, I'm going to play it one more time. You guys repeat it.
Okay.
And then I feel like that'll help. I don't know.
Gravitace.
Gravitace. Oh, she said gravity.
Yes.
You heard that more clearly than
love
I did.
Love how that worked. Well, she's sitting closer.
You know what? You were right. You had to say it. And then it
makes sense.
It engages
yeah.
a different part of your brain.
Yes. It happened to me earlier. I was like, oh, once I say it, I know exactly what I'm saying. All right. Here we go. Next one.
Christmas.
Cosmos.
Cosmos.
Space.
Way
back.
Right.
I'm
yes.
not good at this game.
You just want it to be Christmas. All right. Here's the next one. This one's tough. I'm not going to lie to you about that.
Komoditnya?
That's close.
Komoditnya? That's what it is?
Yeah. Any guesses?
How do I get down? I don't
know. Oh, that's actually pretty close.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I got nothing.
Help me.
Oh,
so
okay.
So you say help me in Russian.
That's really long.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's challenging.
It's too long. They're already dead by that
yeah,
point.
Yeah,
that's... You need a faster...
No one gets saved.
Faster word.
Okay. Here's the last one. And it's very difficult.
Мне все равно, что говорят мои друзья. Мне нравится этот фильм.
We're not going to repeat that one. I don't think that's going to work out.
No, I can't repeat
Ethan,
that either.
Ethan, proposed to my daughter already. You make us wait so long. She's not getting any younger.
Also not a bad guess. The translation is, I don't care what my friends think. I like this movie.
Aw, that's sweet.
And that's exactly how I feel about Gravity. I know. I hope you come around. I hope you see it.
I think it's stunning.
It is stunning.
You know, just like... You can care about your life situation without it being all about your motherhood stuff. Wait, can I just read the funniest thing that I looked up online about this?
Absolutely.
Okay, so this is from a Time article that was fact-checking the movie.
Great.
So in truth, this is a quote, in truth, what an astronaut returning from what NASA calls extravehicular activity, EVA, would have on under her pressure suit would be what's known as a liquid cooling and ventilation garment, a full body, crazily complex bit of space finery that has about 300 feet of fashionable plastic tubing running through it. Whoa. She'd also be wearing an adult diaper and would be wringing with sweat. So that scene where she strips off the suit and she's just like in her chonies.
Yeah, yeah.
And a tank top. Rocking her hot bod.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we missed out on. I was like, how are we not talking about?
I would
about,
have much yeah. rather have seen that. No offense, obviously.
See, any
to...
celebrity in an adult diaper in full sweat.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to see that.
Mm.
And I wouldn't have questioned it because I did question when she takes everything off.
You're like,
and you're
really?
Like, that's how you're just hanging out on the spaceship? Okay, but it seems a little odd. But if she had hundreds of feet of tubing and a diaper, I'd be like, well, that clearly they did that for a reason. That's
yeah,
accurate.
This is accurate. I would have questioned nothing else in the movie.
Yeah, exactly. Is that a comfortable thing that they do? They have to be in that all the time? How does that work?
When they're doing an EVA, an extravehicular activity, they definitely need some way of keeping their temperature of, the, mm-hmm. of their bodies, you know, either cool or warm, depending on their situation. And when you're working hard out on a spacewalk, you're going to generate a lot of heat. And you have to have a way to take that away.
Mm.
And the way they do it is with this liquid cooling garment, hundreds of feet of tubes carrying nice, icy cooled water around your body. And it gets, you know, the heat gets dumped out, essentially, of the spacesuit.
Wow.
And that would be absolutely necessary. Or you would basically think of a spacesuit as a rubber glove with a bunch of layers on your body. You would very quickly overheat.
Yeah.
Pretty
so,
sweet.
So the little outfit she was wearing.
Too flirty for space.
Probably not realistic.
Just skimpy enough for a big movie. But not realistic.
But not rated R.
Yeah, not rated R movie. That's true. Okay, so before we go, I'm sure there's lots of people listening that want to be an astronaut or want to be an astronaut trainer or involved somehow. Do you have some advice for them? What should they do? What should they study? I don't know where to start. I'm 30. Can I do this?
So definitely the requirements to be an astronaut are to have a bachelor's degree in an area of science or math or engineering.
Okay.
And
so far, don't have it. Continue.
Easy.
Easy.
Keep I can on. Get that.
And what is really most beneficial is some life experience that puts you in situations where you have to make very critical decisions that may be life or death type of decisions.
Oh.
Damn.
You have to be able to work well in a team. And there are, these are things that if you were going to space, you would want your crewmates to have these type of skills.
It totally makes sense why Lance Bass went to space now.
Or a lot of money.
Right.
So there's a tremendous amount of information on the internet for people that are actually genuinely interested in being astronauts. There's the NASA website, www.nasa.gov. And you can go to the CASIS website to learn a lot about research, like the fire that I mentioned and the water and the extreme environment and how to study the Earth.
Yeah.
That's
and
awesome.
That's going to be www.spacestationresearch.com.
Space Station Research.
Space Station Research, all one word.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a ton. I don't know what she's saying. There's a ton of information out there. But I'll tell you what, being an astronaut is probably it's an exciting job.
Yeah.
Pretty tremendous. I mean, we all want it. You get a moment of it in this movie, especially in the very beginning, where you're looking at our planet, our Earth, mm-hmm. and it's surrounded by the blackness of space, this velvety, dark blackness of space.
Sounds delicious.
and it's all we have. Like, yep. This is the planet. There's no planet B that we can live on right now.
Yeah.
And it's pretty important that we take care of what we have. And you know,
but it's so much easier to ruin it. And why is that a problem?
Liz is like, why did I come here?
That's a bigger question.
Is that frustrating? Is that annoying to you? I don't understand. I don't think it's a big deal.
Another website that you can learn more about doing research on the space station, because as a national lab, anyone can do space station research.
That's awesome.
If you have a good idea, like about space debris even, mm-hmm. or building a CubeSat that can benefit life here on Earth, or study what happens to people in space. There's a tremendous number of ideas and tremendous amount of resources at www.iss-cases, that's CASIS.org.
Great. ISS-cases.org.
Correct.
And that's where Nicole and I can input all of our recycling satellites.
Starting a profile.
All of your ideas.
Ideas, yeah.
Right now.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Let's get on that.
Let's do it. Space Force. Here we go.
Space Force 101. We're starting it. Nicole, do you have something you want to plug? You have...
Yeah, you can find me online at Nicole C. Comedy. When is this getting released?
Hopefully Tuesday.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I have a sloth in space on my phone. That's not...
You have no idea who you're talking to now. I like space and sloths.
Oh, my God.
Best
Meant
friends.
To be. Yeah, at Nicole C. Comedy, there's a show called Goats at Cafe du Nord in San Francisco happening Wednesday the 29th. You should come and make it. It's awesome. It's long sets for really talented professionals. And I have a podcast called BOC Podcast if you care to listen
BOC
to it.
BOC Podcast. Mm-hmm. What's your podcast about?
It's about different jobs. We're trying to build an army of creative women, but we have interviewed a lunar geologist before, which is pretty cool, mm-hmm. and just women in male-dominated fields talking about their work and us generally talking shit.
Great.
Which is fun.
Okay. Well, Liz, feel
that
free to go on that.
Connect to Liz. Like
We can talk sloths in space.
Yeah, that sounds like a whole new podcast in and of itself, which I love. Okay, great. Thank you guys so much.
Thank
See you.
Next time. This was super fun. Thank
awesome.
You.
Yeah. Bad Science is hosted and produced by me, Ethan Edinburgh. Our associate producer is Megan Bates, and our executive producer is Brady K. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at Bad Science Show and write us an email at badscience@seeker.com. That's badscience@seeker.com. I also wanted to quickly thank the Seeker team in San Francisco. That's where this podcast was recorded. I really appreciate all of your help. You guys are super kind. And that's it for this week's show. If you guys are enjoying the podcast, please rate and review, subscribe, tell your friends about it, and I'll see you next week. Bye.